You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
One of the things that you and I do quite often is we talk to other people a lot. And people from different states, different countries, you know, we just are very lucky to have a wide circle of people that we know and people that we keep in touch with.
The Dr. Ron and Linda connections are both far and wide globally.
Well, they are. And, you know, I had an idea, and we've talked about this before, of putting some of these people on our Talking While Married and asking them what has been the impact of the coronavirus on their life, in their city, in their family, in their job, and those types of
in
things.
In their country.
In their country. Because everybody has a different perspective, and it's really hit people quite differently, right? Some people just have almost no impact, and other people have a huge impact. So in choosing people to talk to, we didn't make a point of selecting anybody with any particular arrangement in life that they have had with coronavirus. We don't know until we ask them. So we don't know what the answers that we're going to be getting are. But this evening, after our first cup of coffee, we're going to be talking to two people and just see what their experience has been with coronavirus. The first person that we're going to be talking to is Giovanni from Italy. And we've spoken with Giovanni before, but this is sort of a different set of questions for Giovanni about, you know, what how this has directly impacted his life, his family's life, his job, and of course, he lives in Florence, Italy, so we'll be talking about that. Now, we know that Italy has been extremely hard hit with coronavirus, and in our conversation with him before, it was pretty heartbreaking to hear what's going on there, and I would like to know if it's getting better, but more importantly, I just want to know that personal touch about how his particular life and his family's life has been impacted.
You know, yeah, and Giovanni and Valeria and their family have become such close friends of ours, and we stay with them when we visit Florence, which is our favorite city in Italy and probably one of our two favorite cities in the whole world. And they are the typical Italian family. And it's always wonderful to hear Giovanni's perspective.
It is. And he's a very bright man. He and his wife, Valeria, are both extremely intelligent and well-spoken. Giovanni speaks better English, so we tend to speak more with him because we can communicate a little bit better. And then in the last segment of our show, we're going to be talking to Joe Black. And Joe Black is a really interesting lady.
We could do a whole show about Joe on itself.
Joe is, first of all, she travels fearlessly around the world. And she does a lot of outreach with her church.
She's missionary work.
Yes, she has worked in Haiti a number of times. And she is from England originally, but has lived in Arizona for some time. But lately has just decided to be kind of a little vagabond in life and do things that she wants to do in life. So she has taken a trip to South America. And she ended up on her last stop in Peru, where the coronavirus became an issue, which it wasn't when she started her trip. And so we're going to hear her story about how that impacted her and her trials and tribulations of getting back to the U.S.
Yeah, because literally she was stuck in Peru.
Right.
And she and, you know, hundreds, if not a couple of thousands of other Americans really had to be very patient at work with the State Department in order to get a chartered flight out of Peru.
Right. So it's her story is very interesting. And just a little bit of background on Joe. She used to ride bucking horses, horses, right?
Well, she was a jockey, actually.
Well, she was a jockey, you're right.
In England.
But she also rode the kind that, you know, that
the bucking
kind
of bronc.
The bucking bronc. Yeah. And she actually has also ridden bucking bulls, which is how we met her originally.
And I'll bet you that 99% of all the people, even rodeo people, don't even realize that there have been a few women in the world and in the United States that have actually been bucking bull riders.
Yes. And they're every bit as good as the men are, and she is one of them. Now, how we met Jo is that she trained some of our bucking bulls, and this lady is an amazing animal trainer. She's amazing with the bulls. I call her the bull whisperer because she has a relationship with those animals like nobody. So she's become a very close friend over many years, and we're excited to talk to her because she just got back to the U.S., from being stuck in Peru. So we're going to have that conversation this evening. A couple other conversations that we will have upcoming. We have some folks from California. We have some folks from New York. And we have some folks from Florida and from Ohio and different areas that are going to be talking with us. Now, interestingly, Ron, and I haven't told you this, but we have two people who were going to come and talk with us on the show, but have decided not to. And the one person is in England, and we really wanted to hear their experiences, but their experiences to them are so bad and so unhappy.
So stressful.
That right. They don't feel that they can talk about it at this time.
You know, isn't that interesting, again, how the stress of coronavirus, like you said in the beginning of our discussion tonight, has impacted everybody differently. And, you know, it's unfortunate. I would love to find out what is going on in the United Kingdom, in London or near London itself to cause, you know, so much stress. But, you know, some people are naturally shy and it's hard to get them on a radio program. But other people are stressed out, and that I just feel so bad for those people. But
yeah,
now it just makes me even more curious.
It does, and I have re-invited them at a time when it's better for them to talk. Another person who feels that they can't come on the radio because they're actually so busy during this coronavirus is a cousin of mine, and I adore her. She also lives in Arizona. And she spends all of her days taking care of her grandkids at this point, and really for all day until 9 o'clock at night. So she feels that she just doesn't have time to leave their side.
And that she's exhausted as well.
Yeah.
Right.
But she did send me some notes to related people, which I think are really
interesting.
Can you
share that?
So I'm actually just going to read it because
sure.
it's short and it's interesting. So her name is Jeannie, and she says, "Hi, Linda. I think some of the things that have impacted my life with the coronavirus would be the grocery stores being unavailable to have the things I normally would get. I still don't understand what the big deal is about the toilet paper issue. It's that kind of an adjustment, I guess you'd call it. Now, I have to get up at 5:30 in the morning to go to the grocery store to get some toilet paper during the senior time, which is till 7 a.m., and I can shop in the morning for things that I need, but there's a limit on what you can buy, and I don't always get what I need. Another thing is my work. I can't show property and go into people's homes right now. Being a realtor, I'm basically at home working, sending listings by email to see my clients that want to buy a home, but they're afraid to go into other people's homes right now. And I guess the good thing about this virus is I see more people out walking their dogs, riding bicycles, roller skating, and just being out in the air, which was normal when I was a kid. Everybody played outside. And I remember we used to go across the street to the jungle on your street in Downey, where you grew up. That was the best fun I ever had, playing hide and go seek in that jungle. And then I think back to how dangerous it could have been if somebody was lurking inside there, ready to grab one of us. But we didn't think like that back then, and we had so much fun. Another good thing I saw was I was at Walmart getting chlorine and acid for my pool, And my pull store is closed on the corner where I live, and all the bicycles on the bicycle racks, which are normally filled to capacity, were empty. And I asked one of the people that were working there, what happened to all the bicycles? And they said, they're gone. People, okay, she's a little bit incoherent here. So she says, people are crazy. I don't know what she says here. And then you look on the streets, and sure enough, little kids are learning how to ride their bikes with their moms and dads. And it's really a good feeling to see that. Again, I think it's brought families closer together. I see people washing their cars in their driveways. It's like back in the early days. And because of unemployment, I see more people mowing their lawns now and actually working in their yards. It's pretty nice. And that's, and at 70 years old, I'm still mowing my own lawns. I take pride in my yards and I enjoy doing the work. So those are just a couple of my thoughts, if you can use it on the radio show. And I have my grandkids coming and I won't be done with them till after 9 o'clock tonight. So be safe and be healthy and love you.
Isn't that interesting? Because look at what we see in the little community that we live in. And that's exactly what we're seeing. We're seeing a lot more people on the street, a lot more people exercising, a lot more people walking their dogs,
yeah.
A lot more people on the exactly on the mowing machines, and just with their kids. You know,
yes. I didn't even know we had this many kids that lived around us. I never see children. So that was good. I also have to make a comment about her second message after that. Says, you know, I just reread what I sent you, and it sounds like I'm crazy, but I was on my microphone and it translated some of my words. So that's why I couldn't understand some words. But yeah, you're right. It is so that more people are out and about. And I love seeing that. I love seeing all the people out and walking. And I wonder if they really want to go back to the way it was.
Well, Linda, do you think that's going to be one of the silver linings of this whole coronavirus thing, that families are going to get a little bit closer together, get to know each other a little better, get a little bit closer to their kids, and maybe kind of stay away from all the hustle and bustle and get more quality time together?
I sure hope that that's the case. I hope that people don't waste this moment and what they could have learned from it, and that they use that to, you know, kind of really, I love what Jeannie said, Ron. Back when we were kids, it was more like this. It really was. There were people out mowing the lawns, and there were kids all over the streets on their bicycles and playing, you know, our kids, they played soccer in the street, and they played baseball in the street, and they rode their bikes. And, you know, I don't see that much of that anymore. It seems like the kids are always in, and they're always busy, and they're too much on the games on the TV and too much on the iPhones and too, you know, just not communicating and just being with other people.
Right. You remember the days where your mom used to say, okay, you got to be home by time the street lights come on.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Kids don't even know what that means.
Yeah.
But maybe they will now, you know, come home when the street lights come on, right? And I'm seeing a lot more adults out there taking advantage of the isolation and exercising more and getting out. I'll tell you what, I mentioned this when we were driving home from the office today. What a absolutely beautiful spring that we're having in Texas.
Yes.
You know, we've been out here for a few years now, and you said last year was beautiful, and it was. There was tons of flowers. But to me, this year, and maybe it's the whole, there's less people on the street, there's less cars driving around, but I just think that this is the most beautiful spring that we've had since we've lived here.
Do you know another reason for that, Ron? Because last year, I remember spring, and we were leaving Texas to go somewhere because we're always traveling here and there. So we left to go to California, and we spent weeks and weeks there. So we've actually missed a lot of the spring in Texas. So to actually be here and live every moment of it is really, really wonderful.
Yeah, you know what? And I think you hit the nail on the head, because you and I have not traveled to California since the beginning of
December.
January. Was it December?
January.
No. January, right, beginning of January. So we really have been in pocket, so to speak, for 4 months.
Yep. And it's been very nice and very different. So I'm enjoying it, and I am ready for it to last a little longer.
Well, I, for one, am really excited about us getting together and talking with our friends from all over the world and all over the country, and learning more about their lives and how the coronavirus has impacted them, their businesses, their employment, their family, their kids.
And what they see for their future. What right. changes may they want to make? What silver linings have they found? That's what I'm most curious about. And I am looking forward. So people will find these shows intermixed with our regular shows. And they will also be on podcasts, so they can listen to them anytime as they choose.
Yeah, and I think we're blessed to have a very diverse group of friends, and with all different types of personalities from all different, you know, backgrounds mm-hmm. and cultures. And I'm just, like I said, I'm dying to find out what they're going to say, because we haven't gone into this with any of them.
No.
It basically a cold call. Hey, would you like to be on the show? And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, we have some questions we want to ask. And yeah, we're going to see what we get. And I know we already have talked to Joe, so people will be hearing that momentarily, and Giovanni as well.
Well, let's get that cup of coffee and come back and get right down into it.
Okay.
AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. As we celebrate our 4-year anniversary, thank you for making it all possible. Well, shouldn't news deliver truth and inspire us to reach higher? With blogs, podcasts, video, and 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
We're talking with Joe Black, and Joe Black has been a longtime friend of ours. She's one of the most interesting people that we know. She actually was the only female bull trainer in the country. But one thing about Joe is she has a true travel bug. So Joe is always off somewhere in the world, and when coronavirus came to be, Joe was in South America.
You were in Peru.
Yeah, you
right?
were in Peru. And you kind of got stuck there. So I want to ask you, Joe, how was your experience with coronavirus happening around the world while you were out of the country, and then you became stuck in Peru? How was that? How did the people there react? What happened?
Well, it was completely different experience to anything I've ever had, but obviously from everybody's had a different experience. Basically what happened, I was actually supposed to go to Colombia. I got to Lima, which is the main airport in Peru, and the people in Colombia canceled my trip. So I ended up going to Cusco, which is up in the mountains. It's the gateway to Machu Picchu. And when I got to Machu Picchu, I had been there 2 weeks volunteering. When the coronavirus really kind of hit a level in Italy that made the president of Peru decide to basically lock down the country just like that, no warning. We literally had 24 hours notice to get a flight. Where I was located, I was 22 hours away from the airport, and obviously no possibility to get a flight out.
So you were pretty much stuck there. And how long were you there?
I was actually stuck there on complete lockdown. I'm not talking quarantine like here, complete lockdown for 15 days.
And were you lodged in a house, in a hotel? How were you lodged?
Yeah, I was actually staying in an Airbnb. Thankfully, you know, the owners of hotels, Airbnbs, they could have taken advantage of the situation and, you know, did price gouging, but they actually did the complete opposite. They were very sympathetic to our plight. There was a lot of us there. Apparently there was 7,000 total Americans in Peru. About 3,000 of those were in Cusco. And they gave us, like, my Airbnb owner, she cut the price in half. And a lot of hotels did that for people as well.
Wow. So, and you were there, you said you were doing some volunteer work. What type of volunteer work were you doing?
Yeah, I was actually volunteering at a wildlife rescue place, which, again, it was even further out the mountains. And that was pretty scary because I still don't even know to this day what happened to those animals, because nobody lived on the premises. And when they locked the country down, you literally were not allowed to travel. Like, there was no cars, no private cars allowed on the road. No taxis even were allowed. I mean, this is complete lockdown. And I still don't even know to this day how those animals got taken care of. But I assume somebody must have had to go there and sleep on the premises.
Joe, how did you get food?
It was complete opposite to here. We had plenty of food. None of the stores had any problems. There was no problems with hoarding or anything like that. And I think the media there took the opposite approach. Instead of showing pictures of empty shelves, they basically showed pictures of full shelves. And so it didn't create any kind of panic or, you know, people thinking, oh my gosh, there's nothing left, we have to go buy. It was the complete opposite.
Wow, that's a very interesting idea for the government to do that. Very intelligent.
Right, exactly. And so nobody panicked. There was plenty of food and plenty of toilet paper. Everything was available, and we just bought what we needed for the, you know, every 3 or 4 days, because you were allowed to walk to a store.
Were you able to cook inside the Airbnb? Did you have like a little kitchenette, or were you just buying food that you could just eat right out of packages?
Yeah, no, they had a full kitchen. It was a communal, it was a large building with about, I think they had about 9 bedrooms. There was just me and one other lady.
Oh,
and
okay.
full kitchen. So, nobody could come in or out, and it just happened at the time. I was actually the only person there, and one other lady came in, and that was it.
So you couldn't walk out on the street. You were in total isolation and inside your Airbnb residence?
Yes. The rules were you were allowed to walk within a certain distance, like 2 blocks, to store, medical, or bank. And that was all that was open, like little grocery stores, medical. Well, there is no medical, really. I mean, like pharmacies. Mm-hmm. And some were open. That was it.
Did people, to your knowledge, did anybody become infected with coronavirus?
Yes, there was actually, you know, when I got there, because it's so isolated, obviously the only people bringing coronavirus in were people that already had it. And apparently there was a Dutch gal and a German, I believe. And they were staying in a hostel with about 100 people in the hostel. And I mean, they shut that hostel down completely, like had armed guards standing outside, would not let the people out of the hostel at all.
Oh, wow.
So it was, those kids were in a pretty desperate situation because they couldn't even get food.
Now, did you have access to media, to a television, to a radio? Did you get to see any news, both from Peru that you could understand and also from the United States while you were there?
Yeah, I did not see anything in the United States. The only thing was obviously on the phone. We created there was a lot of chat groups, WhatsApp and Telegram, where people could communicate. And this is the way we found out about flights going out, because obviously otherwise you wouldn't know, because all the news is Peruvian.
Yeah.
And every day the president gave an address, kind of the same as here. And thankfully we had somebody in the chat group that translated the whole thing. So we knew what was going on, knew the rules, knew, you know, what we could do and what we couldn't.
Now, I saw that you had posted on social media. You were posting a couple of times a day on social media, and I was actually following you, and you were showing, you know, the view from your hotel room or your residence room would look to me like it was elevated because you could look over the city and look towards the mountains. So I'm sure that it was nice for you to have social media just to keep you sane while you were there.
Yeah. And it was just so surreal because I was in, the location is stunning. I had a great Airbnb. I mean, like I said, I had access to food, everything I needed. So it was almost surreal knowing what was going on in the rest of the world. And also in Lima, because obviously Lima, completely different ballgame.
How so, Joe? How so? Was Lima a different ballgame?
Well, it was a big city, so the military was a huge presence there. People would literally get arrested every day just for walking outside, like walking a dog even. People were getting arrested.
Okay.
So in Cusco, it was a lot more laid back. The police were a lot more relaxed. If you were seen outside without a face mask, yes, they're going to arrest you.
Okay.
Or walking somewhere you shouldn't be, they're going to arrest you. But they were pretty more laid back there.
Well, you know, when I was following you on social media, I know you were anxious about being able to get a flight out of Peru and back stateside. Can you tell us a little bit about that story and what was going on with that, and, you know, what types of negotiations were going on, and how did you, I know you got out on an airplane, but who facilitated the air travel for you? Was that a government thing or was it private? How did that happen?
Yeah, it was kind of a big operation. And the issue was they started getting people out of Lima pretty quick because Lima's a big airport, and they contracted like United Airlines, American Airlines, British Airways, the flights to London, the UK people. They contracted flights there for them. The issue in Cusco was that the big planes cannot land. Well, they can land, but they cannot take off out of there. And it takes the specially trained pilots. So they can only use one airline and certain pilots. And that was the issue in the government having trouble getting us out of Cusco. And that's why it took a little longer. It took about a week longer for us.
Now, was that the United States government that you're talking about or the Peruvian government that was, you know, facilitating in subcontracting with air carriers?
Yeah, it was the United States government. And it was kind of frustrating for us because we sat there and watched all the other governments get their people out, like Israelis, Germans, French, Canadians. They all got their people out real fast. And us for U.S. people, we were the last ones out of there. So it was a little frustrating from that point. But yeah, the U.S. government, apparently what happened was the Peruvian government was kind of using us as political pawns because they wanted the U.S. to pay for their Peruvians. There's a lot of Peruvian students who are over here. And from what I understand, the Peruvian government wanted the U.S. to pay for their students.
When you say that,
to pay for them to go home?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You mean Peruvian students that were in the United States and they wanted to get the United States to fly the Peruvian students back to Peru? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly, because they were using Peruvian airlines, and a Peruvian airline is not going to fly an empty plane from Peru to the U.S.
Okay.
I mean, you know, back to the U.S., right? So they were basically exchanging, saying, okay, you know, we'll fly your guys out, but you got to fly our guys back.
It seems to always be that way in everything, doesn't it?
So in other words, you're saying that you were essentially
a quid pro quo.
You were sort of a political hostage, right?
Pretty much, yeah. And, you know, I think because the other nations and countries aren't seen as being as rich as the Americans, I think that's why, you know, it came down. Yeah, you know, we're going to get
of course.
Guys.
Well, Joe, now you're home and you're in Arizona. And just real quickly, because I have one more question for you after that, what do you see different now? How is this affecting Arizona?
Arizona's pretty quiet as far as, you know, the caseload. There's not very many cases. The state is supposed to be on not lockdown, but, you know, quarantine and not non-essential. But I'm not really seeing that. Everybody's pretty much going about their normal day, huh?
Right. And where in Arizona are you, you know, exactly? I mean, what big city are you near? Phoenix, Scottsdale? Where are you located right now?
Yeah, I'm in Scottsdale, technically in Scottsdale. So, yeah.
So my last question is, from this experience, and you've had more experience with this than most in some ways, but from this experience, have you found any silver linings that you can take away from this, something that you learned or something that, you know, is going to be helpful in life to either yourself or somebody else? Lessons that, you know, we as a country and as a people should learn, you know, are there any of those things that run through your mind?
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's a lot, but, you know, first and foremost is I think people have kind of sat up and realized what's really important in life. You know, it's not your possessions, it's not your job, it's not, you know, things you do every day, because they can be taken away in an instant. And they were taken away in an instant for a lot of people. And then you realize, you know, the most important things are family. For me, is God. It always has been God. And just, you know, the little things in life, because it's not your job. It's not your money. It's not your car. Your health, your family, and your faith, I think, are the most important things. And they always should be.
All right. And what did you find out about yourself? What did you find out about Joe Black during this challenging moment? Was it something new that you found out, or was it a validation, you know, regarding your character traits and how you were raised?
Yeah, I mean, I did stress a little bit because I've never been in that kind of situation where I really was at the mercy of my government. And I've never been in that position before. So I did have to learn, hey, you know what? It doesn't matter what you think of your government, you have to trust them. They are in control, and, you know, they came through. It wasn't pretty. I mean, it was kind of a mess, which I'm not going to go into, but hey, they got us out and we're safe. And, you know, for me, it's just, you got to have faith in everything you do. You can't rely on stuff and money.
Yeah, just the secular things, you know, your faith in God. What I'm hearing from you is your faith in God got you through some of the toughest humps in this thing. You know, there's an adage that we've heard so many, many times from people that leave the United States, and they experience challenge and strife and all sorts of terrible things internationally. And when they come back to the United States, they thank God that they're American citizens. Did you feel that way about coming back to the States?
Yeah, amen, Ron. And actually, this was my first, as you know, I was born a British citizen. This was actually my first trip on my U.S. passport as a United States citizen.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that, because I know you're a big traveler.
Just became a United States citizen.
That's right. You're a brand new citizen. What's that like? Yep. You know, we got like a minute. What's that like, being a, you know, making the transition between being a British citizen and now being a United States citizen?
Yeah. I mean, that was my first trip on the blue passport. And let me tell you, it served me well.
Oh, it absolutely did. Although by what you said, you might have been home sooner if you were on that British passport. I don't know.
Well, you know, what's kind of funny, because, you know, people, you know, our listeners that are, and our followers that are listening to you now, that I know what they're saying, because it's what I said when I first met you. And that is, I can't believe she's from Great Britain. She's an American. What are we talking about here? But they forget that you've been in the United States of America for many years.
Yep, this is definitely home now. So, yeah.
Well, that's good. Well, listen, we have just thoroughly enjoyed talking to you. I know you're in a remote area, and we hope that everything's going to go well for you, and the country's going to open up fairly soon, and we're actually looking forward to having you as our extended guest in Texas.
Yeah, yep, I'm looking forward to that. I've always loved Texas, so.
So do we, and Texas is one of the first states that's going back to work. So we just heard that today. So it'll be good, and we look forward to seeing you, Joe, and thank you for spending some time with us.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Great, Joe. Have a great evening.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police at Amazon.com.
What if a new treatment, backed by 17,000 scientific articles, was proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance? What would you pay for even the smallest dose of this treatment? The good news is you don't have to pay anything, because these are just some of the benefits of a full night of quality sleep. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Until now, most sleep aids haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM Sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, CELL.com/sleep.
Well, we are talking with Giovanni Celli, a good friend of ours from Italy. He lives in Florence, he and his family. And Florence, of course, well, all of Italy has been very hard hit by this pandemic. So we wanted to speak with him and see how this has personally affected he and his family and his city. Hello, Giovanni.
Oh, hello. Good morning, everybody.
Buongiorno.
Buongiorno.
Oh, but it's not.
Buongiorno. Buongiorno. Buongiorno.
Buongiorno. Anyway, go ahead.
It should be good afternoon here in Italy, because it's 5 p.m. here.
Okay.
Yes.
So it's seven hours difference. Okay?
Okay. Well, our first question to you is, how are things in Italy, and how has this pandemic affected you and your family, your city, your work, all of the things that go with that?
Okay, we've been experiencing this coronavirus at the beginning of March. So our government decided to close everything on March the 5th. So all the schools, all the activities, all the shops, stores, restaurants, bars, and industries have been closed since March 5th. This has completely changed our life, because we've been having the kids at home, let's say going to school online, so following the lessons online and receiving tons of homeworks via email. So we had to follow the kids day by day. This is, let's say, good on one way, or on the other side, a lot of time has been dedicated to them. So it is not so easy to do our daily routine, let's say.
Right.
Anyway, regarding our life here in the center of Florence, it's been quite easy, because we never had any problem with food. let's say that markets have been the only kind of store open during this period. And since there are not so many residents here in the center, we didn't have any shortage of food, or maybe we didn't have to wait in long line or outside the store. So that's been easy.
So everything else is closed. But Giovanni, are the restaurants open for takeout at all there?
Some of them. They're basically all closed. We cannot go inside the restaurants, but some of them provide food delivery. So
okay.
That's pretty good, but not so many. And something is going to change on May the 4th, which means 2 months after March the 5th. So they're going to open restaurants and bars.
Oh, they are?
Yeah, okay. And a few other stores, other kind of stores. And they will have to decrease the number of seats inside. Okay. So if, like 2 months ago, a restaurant could have 100 people sitting inside, now they will go probably on about 25.
Okay.
So there have been less cases of coronavirus and less deaths now in Italy. Have you flattened out?
Exactly. The numbers are decreasing. So this is a good sign. On the other side, also the number of the deaths, yes, has gone down. So this is why the government has decided to open to the second step, let's say second phase.
So
which means opening again a few things, like also some activities, some industries will be open. And so this is a very important step. But
Giovanni, right now though, the police are still outside, and other than going to an essential place like the market, you just can't go out and walk around, correct?
I can go out right now. I can go out and walk around my neighborhood.
Oh, good.
Maybe for 20 minutes, half an hour.
Okay.
If you have a dog, you can go outside with the dog. If you have a kid, you can do it as well. But just for half an hour, let's say.
Okay.
Okay, so there's a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel there, because last time we spoke to you, people were getting fined for walking around outside.
Yes, exactly. This is what's going on right now. If I have, I need to get my car and go to a certain place, I need to have a paper with me stating where I'm going and why I am taking my car.
Now, Giovanni, Giovanni, you live very near, within walking distance of the big train station. So, and you have both the municipal and the state trains there. The train station is completely closed, I would assume. No trains, no nothing.
Just a few trains are working, just a few trains. And but I have no idea, because I haven't gone to the station in the last 2 months. So
okay.
I don't know how many people are checking the train. Maybe they really need to. So they may go there and then take the train.
And how has this affected people's jobs there?
There's a lot of problem coming probably in the next few months, because all the activities have been closed, all the industries, everything. So I think that there will be a large number of unemployed in the next few months. Many people have problems.
If you have an activity like
a bar or a restaurant, you're closed, but you have to pay the wages to your employees, you have to pay taxes, you have to pay the rent, you have to pay a lot of things. On the other side, you have no money coming in. So this will affect seriously.
Sure. And does the government help people in that situation with, like, we have stimulus money here Does the government help people?
Yes, they're trying to do many loans. Let's say they will give money to people in a very easy way, probably. But this is something that is not working yet. They speak a lot, they say a lot of things, but in reality, people it's not so easy to get the money from the government.
Right. So a lot of talk about it, but not a lot of action.
Exactly.
That sounds familiar.
Talking. But
what about the churches, Giovanni? Are the churches closed as well?
The church are, let's say they're closed, yes. You cannot go there and have a mass.
Okay.
But, you're allowed to go inside and make a prayer and leave the church in 5 minutes, let's say.
Okay. Are you, when you do go out, is the requirement for everybody to wear a mask outside when you go outside?
Absolutely.
With a mask? Yes. Okay.
At least with a mask, and this will go on for the next few months.
Yeah. And do you also wear the gloves when you go out too, Giovanni?
I wear my gloves when I go to the market.
Uh-huh. Okay. Like we do. Yeah.
Once we enter inside the market, we have to wear gloves and masks. When you're walking outside, only the mask.
Are you having a beautiful spring in Florence right now?
Yes. This is the pain, because it's sunshine here. It's warm outside. It's beautiful, and we cannot go out.
But
after in 8 days from now, on May the 8th, we should be allowed to go out.
Yeah,
that will be how it will, a treat for you.
So, exactly, but I don't know if everybody will go out at the same time. It will be a mess.
Well, that could happen. So from this whole experience, because I know you have been really locked up over there much longer than we have, but from this whole experience, can you think of anything that may have be a good thing that has come from it, something that you've learned or something that has been valuable to you through this experience?
Regarding myself, I have learned that I have to be more patient and I have to be more relaxed. And the best thing is spending time with the kids and with my wife, Valeria, as well. And on the other side, it's been impossible to go outside and see friends and stay together, have lunch together or dinner together. That was the most painful thing. But the man, let's say humanity, it's very easy for us to adapt to changes.
Okay.
And this is very good, because at the beginning, it's been very hard. After a couple of weeks, everything was easier.
Good. You know, we have a saying in the United States, it's called the silver lining, right? Which means you have something bad, but you find, you know, something positive about it.
Yes.
You know, one of the things here, of course, me being Italian, is I'm doing the dinner cooking. And Linda says that she's never had it so good. So, who is doing, because we don't go to the restaurant. So I am experimenting and cooking new dishes that we haven't had yet. And she loves it. Who's doing the cooking over at your house? Or are you?
We are both trying to experiment a few new dishes. And I've learned to make bread. I've learned to make some cakes, like apple pie, like sacher torte.
Okay.
Wow. And I want some of that when we come to Italy.
the mille foglie, yes, of course, you will have the mille foglie, and then something else. So Valeria and I are both trying to make something new, and it's a good way to spend time also with the kids, because we try to involve them in the cooking. So
good.
It's fun for them as
well. So how have the kids been taking the isolation? How do you see changes? What you know, there are certainly some big challenges when you have young kids locked up inside. But what things do you see? What transformations or personality traits have you seen with the children?
They need to go out. They need to use their energy outside. So I see that sometimes they're kind of nervous. On the other side, they're pretty lazy. So it has not been a real nightmare. Sometimes they really like to stay at home on the couch or on the bed playing games. So this has been good. Okay. The worst thing probably is that they are missing their friends.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, school, the life at school is bad on one side, on the other side. You're with your friends, you talk, you joke, and this is something they're missing. Absolutely.
Giovanni, what do you and your family, how do you feel about what's going to change in the future from this in Italy, and specifically in Florence?
Well, Florence is a touristic place. We've been experiencing so many visitors during the last 5-6 years, and the numbers were increasing every single year. Now I think that we will probably start to have people coming in maybe September, October, maybe, hopefully, I don't know. And it will be a slow recovery towards normality. Maybe in 1 year from now, everything will be back to normality. Let's say in 1 year, let's say in 2021, maybe September, October next year will be like it was 3 months ago.
You know, Giovanni, does the Italian government believe that the coronavirus is going to return seasonally, like we all experience the flu worldwide, and it comes back, you know, like in the United States, we get the flu in like October, the season starts in October.
Yes, yes, everybody is expecting a second return of the coronavirus in September, October. But first of all, we have to face this first flu, let's call it flu. I don't know if it is a flu. I don't know if we can call it flu because it's been, I have read many things and it looks like it's something different from the typical flu.
Yeah, I think it does have different characteristics. They are, it seems that they're coming out with some good things to mitigate it, and a little bit more testing, and I think that maybe we can get a handle on it.
You know, Giovanni, if the Italians, like the Americans, and I think everybody worldwide believes that the coronavirus is going to be seasonal, with what you have learned so far, what types of preparations do you think that you will make for the return of the virus, and how do you think the Italian government is going to prepare itself for a return of the virus in a different stage, different, you know, strain of the virus, perhaps?
I have no idea. There's nothing sure yet. This is something completely new, and I think that they're still trying to study this virus and understand it completely.
Were you able to buy masks and gloves easily, or was it a difficulty for you to get the protective equipment like the masks and the gloves?
Was not easy until, let's say, 2 weeks ago, and now they're providing all the masks and gloves to the pharmacies.
Okay,
so it's
good.
Pretty easy to go there and buy it.
What about the home test? Have they come out in Italy with the home test that people can see if they've had it and see if they've been exposed?
Yeah, no. It's something we're missing. We're not in such a position that we need to have a test. I think we will be the last to have it.
Oh.
Or all the doctors and nurses and all the hospital staff will need to have it, and probably the police and so on. But regarding normal people like we are, we're going to be the last, and okay. There is nothing here in the pharmacy.
You know, I have a...
It's not so easy to get it.
I understand. I've got a different question, Giovanni. When yep. you get the opportunity to get out of the house and as a family, what are some of the first things that you're going to do in Florence? You've been cooped up in there for a couple of months. What are the pleasures? What are the first things that you and your family are going to do when you escape the house?
We would love to go to the seaside. It takes 1.5 hours driving to Forte de Marmi, Viareggio, on the coast, and we would love to go and walk on the beach.
Are they going to open the beaches around May 8th, do you think?
Well, I have no idea. They're trying to study something to protect all the people inside, like spaces with a barrier between a family and the other family. They're still trying to study and find a solution.
Okay.
But for sure, they will open the beaches. They will be open.
Good.
And probably, like for the restaurant, there will not be so many people like in the previous years.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you see some sort of light at the end of the tunnel here with at least getting a little bit more freedom coming up in the next few weeks. And
yes.
Thank you.
In 1 week from now.
Yeah. And thank you for spending some time with us, because it's just so interesting to hear a different perspective on, and actually the perspective is very similar to our own experience here. And, you know, just everybody has a different experience, and you've been a lot more cooped up than we have. So God bless you. And we look forward to seeing you,
thank you.
Hopefully in the next few months when this whole thing dies down some.
Yeah. You know, we promise we will be back.
Thank you very much.
to stay with
we'll
you.
We'll be back as okay? soon as we can.
As soon as we can. Okay. So
I'm really looking forward to seeing you soon again.
Fantastic.
Thank you. So give love to Valeria from us.
And the children.
Yes.
And we
thank
wish
you
a buonasera.
Buonasera.